E1.
Number 39B.
I always felt, and I did this over years and years, practically without leaving it out for one day in a year. And I feel that if the idea of science, which was so small and tender at that time, could actually unfold the way it did unfold, I attribute that to this very paragraph on obstetrics and to my constant devotion to that law of birth. And that's why I teach it to the students too, as one of the finest way of being receptive. In the structure of the chapter on teaching, this paragraph appears at the point of love, and you can see why. Because it's the mother that really gives birth to an idea. So that it shows here love, the mother, and the birth, spirit, and actually in the layout of the chapter it appears at the point of love as spirit. It is so exactly written, that textbook, that one stands in awe before it. In that paragraph she says the following thing. She says, teacher and student. She puts teacher and student into the same, what you say, box or, the same place. She doesn't make a difference if you are a teacher or a student. She feels that both need the science of obstetrics, both need to know how to give birth to the idea of God. Teacher and student should also be familiar with the obstetrics taught by this science. And so I see that the only thing that can be familiar with the science is not my human brain and my human thinking and my human knowing. The only thing that can be familiar with science is the divine mind. And so I start right in from the divine mind and see, no matter if we call ourselves teachers or students or practitioners or group leaders or I don't know what, all that doesn't matter. What matters is that I start with the one mind. Because only through the one mind I can be at one with the science of being. No other mind can fathom the science of being. So I would see lovingly and with a great sense of awe that that mind which will teach me something is the same mind with which I listen and with which I search. There isn't a mind that is going to tell me what it knows, and then another mind that is learning it. There is only one mind, so that the same mind that interprets itself to me is the same mind as the mind which receives and hears the teaching. It's a great thing to break down that barrier between a human mind that is learning and the divine mind that is giving all information. Just break it down and see that we are familiar with the one mind, and that one mind knows everything. It's that mind that can see everything, hear everything. It's the all-knowing, all-perceiving, all-comprehending, all understanding, all guiding, all leading, one mind. And this is the mind which is my mind. Then I feel familiar with the science of obstetrics as taught by this science. And then the crucial point, to attend properly the birth of the new child, comma, or divine idea. You see, she wants to take away the thought that obstetrics has to do with bringing to birth a little baby. So though she uses the terminology that goes with birth, namely the new child, but it is the new child, not a new child. The new child as a symbolism for what? For divine idea. So what we give birth to is actually the divine idea. Not really, as Jesus had to tell him in the time of Christianity, that he can be born again, but the child of today is not man, the child of today is science, the divine idea. And what should be born within our consciousness is really the form of the idea of science. The gestalt and form of the idea of science itself. And right from the 30s I know that I was always trying to see that my life should be used. Not that I'm a better man or a bigger man or a more a successful man, a healthier man. All this was never in my mind. The only thing I longed for is to see it to be used, that the idea of divine science is being born. And it was that time where I had such a terrific love for Mrs. Eddy's mission that was never surpassed with any other love I ever felt for anything. It was not a personal love, not at all. It was that I could see that what she was trying to give with that textbook was that new paradigm to the old concept of science and to religion, and to show that there is a completely new system of reference which is necessary for the whole world, and on which this new science, that divine science, is based. And therefore, the greatest child we can bring forth is naturally this universal idea of science. Can you see, here again we can have a little system of reference or a big system of reference. If we have a little system of reference, we use this paragraph in bringing forth our true nature of man, to give birth to our true manhood. To me, this is much too small. It's not even worthwhile thinking about to me. Because the idea that is necessary today is not the perfect man, but a perfect science. And therefore, what should be born in world consciousness is the idea of science itself. So if we have that bigness and really see that what should flow through us, that the spirit that blows through us is really that which wants to bring forth that which is necessary for our age and not that which was necessary for Jesus' age, namely the presentation and interpretation of the science of being. So, what is the necessary attitude in order to bring forth that divine idea? She says to attend properly the birth of the new idea, the new child or divine idea. You should. So we have a human demand, you should do something. Namely, you should so detach mortal thought from its material conceptions that the birth will be natural and safe. This is the turning point in that whole paragraph. The only human demand which is necessary. First, the human demand is to be familiar with, and we can only be familiar with by saying, I don't want to have any mind of my own, any knowledge of my own. Only that mind within me, which is the same mind as the mind of God, only that can be familiar with the signs of being. And the second demand here is really to detach mortal thought from all material conceptions. Can you see that? I remember in those days I had a little file in which I wrote out practically every part of this sentence, of this paragraph, over pages and pages on one side, on the other side. I would write down in few words, in key words, what is necessary. And so I was writing down to myself what is necessary to detach mortal thought. What material conception would stand in my way? And I had a list of dozens and dozens and dozens of arguments that would like to stand in our way, so that we would not detach our thought from all material conceptions. What stands in our way, for instance, is that we say, we don't know enough. We are not good enough. I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm only a woman. A man would understand it. What stands in our way can be hundreds and hundreds of all these buts and whys. And so just take them and just put them right in a garbage can. It belongs to the garbage and to nothing else. There are no real arguments. And so in this way we detach mortal thoughts from all material conceptions. That material conceptions which try in its best moral and religious way to determine what we should do, how we should think, what should be our ideal, what should be our greatest aim and purpose. Just put that all away. And when you have put all away, what is left? You have nothing left but the activity of the divine, synonymous terms. So that actually at that point you can see, detach every material thought from every material conception, and you put it into the positive sense and you see, all right, in order to give birth to the divine idea, I am only under the influence of the impulsion of life and the factuality of truth and the fulfilled sense of love. And then I have really detached myself from all material conceptions. So I have a tremendous feeling that if I let constantly only life, truth and love flood my being, flood my thought, flood my aims and purposes and motives and attitudes, then life, truth and love has really a chance to bring forth life, truth and love's own idea of itself. Then she says, then the birth will be natural and safe. You can see it will be a natural development, not a development that goes through trial and error, that has a lot of chemicalization and crisis, that goes through deep waters and hell. But it's a natural development. And it is safe. Can no more be destroyed. It has the tone of soul in it, the safety of soul in it, the balance of soul in it, the unchangeability of soul in it, so that you really feel that which is coming out comes out in a natural way. Nothing will obstruct the birth of it. And I would always see that because spirit is the only, there is no obstruction in the only, there is no hindrance to the only, to the unfoldment of the only, so that out of the strength of the idea itself, the idea moves forward and forward and really paves the way. She goes on and says, though gathering new energy, it's gathering new energy. Actually it does. You see, it takes some energy really to detach mortal thought from all its material conceptions. Because these material conceptions just come in and flood and flood and flood and flood our consciousness. They bring forth a whole army and legion of arguments why we cannot have a new birth. Why the divine idea will not unfold within ourselves. And so we must use that divine energy and gather that energy, which just always says to everything, I detach myself from all that. Whatever the arguments are, I don't listen to them. I don't take them for a value. I don't take them as a truth, as a reality. I just see them as irrelevant to the whole idea. And this energy is necessary. And though gathering new energy, this idea cannot injure its useful surroundings in the travail of spiritual birth. Yeah? She doesn't say that though gathering new idea, this idea cannot injure its surroundings. It does injure its surroundings. But it does not injure its useful surroundings. But it certainly does injure the unuseful surroundings. That we can be sure. That idea has within itself the tremendous strength and energy to wipe away all that within us and in our surrounding which does not belong to the idea, which is not helpful for the idea, which wants to oppose the idea, which is an objection to the idea. It crushes it right to powder. And so when we witness these very symptoms, don't be astonished. It's a law. It's okay. It takes away all unuseful surroundings, whatever that unuseful surroundings may be. It may even be our best personal friends. They take them away, and it does. The moment it is personal or it is a hindrance for our spiritual unfoldment, it crushes it to powder. It can take away from us all sorts of things which we like humanly. But if it's destructive to the unfoldment of the idea, it takes it away. So can you see that it needs strength, that it needs energy to stand through that birth? A spiritual idea has not a single element of error. Think of that. Within that struggle, when you go through perhaps that struggle where the unuseful surrounding is hurt by it, just know that the idea itself has not a single element of error. So you get a sense of security and safety and an affirmative sense within yourself that you say, okay, only the best is happening. The idea has not a single element of error. And that gives one confidence and hope and strength and helps us to carry through. A spiritual idea has not a single element of error, and this truth removes properly whatever is offensive. She doesn't say removes whatever is offensive, she says it removes properly whatever is offensive in a divinely proper way, which may not be humanly proper. We may not like it, but it's in a very efficient way. The divine plan knows how to go about when the idea does something and knows the proper way, the proper method, the proper channel, the proper time, everything just right. And we can rely on that. So if we don't see a solution, which we should have tomorrow, we don't see it today, that doesn't matter. The idea will give a solution at the proper time. And we may only know the solution when we need it, not the day before. We always think if we don't see the form of our future demonstration or unfoldment already now, that we don't make the grade, because we don't know it. We shouldn't. In the line of birth, everything comes about at the right time, at the right place, through the right channels, through the right experience, at the proper, under the proper conditions. Everything is right. Can you see how it demands of us that full trust in the rightness of the divine idea? And then you see it. The new idea, conceived and born of truth and love, is clad in white garments. Beautiful. The new idea, conceived and born of truth and love. We have that combination of truth and love. When we see that idea suddenly being born in truth and love, namely there where we see that the idea has existed since time immemorial, then she says, then it is clad in white garment. White garment means it's clad with perfection, with all the seven synonymous terms. Where I can see that the idea therefore reflects the whole world, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. And I see it in white garment. I see that it is God created, spirit unfolded, soul identified, principle demonstrated, life eternalized, truth conscious, and love fulfilled. And then I have a feeling everything is okay. Its beginning will be meek. That's again an indication where we humanly have to be careful. It doesn't come in a big splash. It doesn't come and says, now you have studied this thing for a week and they have gone through the seminar, now heaven should be open and in a big splash now everything should be different. It starts meek. Every idea starts very meek. You can hardly detect it how it started. But if we are then a mother to it, then we can see that even if the beginning is very small, that is quite enough. Because we know that everything that has started will grow, its growth is sturdy, and its maturity undecaying. Can you see the mother sense that can see and be satisfied with the first touch of the idea and can see that this will gather strength, its growth is sturdy, and can anticipate the final promise or the final form and anticipate it and take the end right from the beginning and see the bigness of what is happening within our consciousness. When this new birth takes place, the Christian Science infant, she doesn't say the infant of Christian scientists, she says the Christian Science infant, namely the idea of Christian Science, not the babies of Christian scientists. The Christian Science infant is born of the Spirit. See, that's what Nicodemus was asking for, and Jesus was telling him, he said, it must be born of the Spirit. Then it's born of the Spirit. Because why it is born of the Spirit? Because we have detached mortal thought from all material conceptions. And so there is nothing that interferes, no motive, false motive that interferes, no false purpose, no false desire, no false will that interferes. There's just that one thing, namely the purity the singleness, the onlyness, the transparency, the infinite reflection of that one spirit. And so it will be born of spirit, born of God, and can cause the mother no more suffering. No more. See, she doesn't say no suffering, no more suffering, because she has shown that in the struggle, in the development, that idea is going to destroy the unuseful surrounding, that it will gather energy, that it is an inward striving and struggle that goes on. And so we don't need to try to evade an inward struggle. It's something beautiful to struggle spiritually, just as Jacob struggled with the angel. But once we have really gone through that struggle and have really purified our consciousness well enough to see that we don't want anything for us, that we only want the spirit to blow where it lists us, and don't want to outline anything, then really the idea is born of the spirit and can cause the mother no more suffering. By this we know that truth is here. We get again to truth and love. The truth is here and has fulfilled its perfect work. Again, we get to that touch of absolute Christian Science of truth and love, where we see that the idea is already fulfilled and that nothing is lacking. And within that promise, we really can watch how the birth takes place. So this is a short review on that paragraph on obstetrics, and you can see it is a help for us in our study, in our attitude, where we really see, unless we let the spirit flow, we are obstructing the development of the divine idea. It says, not my, but thine will be done. Let not our human conceptions of the divine idea be done, but let the one mind be my mind, and let the one spirit be my spirit. And then the birth takes place in an ordered way and can't harm us. Okay, so I say goodbye to you, and I hope I can say goodbye to each one. If not, I want to say it now.